Mini episode 1725 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1725. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you with two of my fellow FDH Lounge original dignitaries. That would be Jason Jones and Chris Galloway. Jason Jones, of course, our senior editor, and he is the strength, the power, the backbone, if you will, behind our draft rankings every year. This is our 2024 NFL Draft Recap Show. And Jason's rankings are key in our guide. You can go check it out on our main page at Pro Football Draftology 2024 on the main page at FantasyDraftHelp.com. Also there, we're going to be referring to this just as heavily, is our 2024 NFL Draft post-draft rankings. So we have rankings in three different categories here. We'll be getting into that subsequently. Just looking at the value of players taken from Jason's big board, combination of value and needs 50-50, and how teams did just on the needs part of it. So there are a couple different ways of looking at this. But Jason Jones's rankings, of course, as I say, the backbone of our guide every year. And Jason, I know you got a lot to say about what we just saw over the course of the last week or so with the picks being made in Detroit.
Yeah, this was weird, man. Always happy to get here and do the post show, but I'll be honest, by the time we got to 15, 16, about the halfway point, I was yelling TV, what is going on?
Yeah, it was, we've never seen anything like that as far as how long it took to get any defensive players in the mix. That part of it was really kind of weird. But another guy that I know who has a lot of thoughts on this, he has been our most regular contributor on all things NFL the last couple of years. We've done the divisional previews with him the last couple of years, and then in-season and off-season contributions as well. Our guy, Chris Galloway, and Chris, you are also a staple of our draft coverage before and after every year, and I know there was a lot that had you feeling very strongly about how various teams did things.
Yeah, it was interesting, and I think, can we finally just bury the whole concept of when the GMs roll out and say, hey, you know, we don't draft for need. We draft off the board. Whoever's on top on our board, that's who we're taking. Every single team was drafting for need all over the place and when they were drafting. So can we stop the nonsense of, oh, we just stick to our board regardless of what our needs are and we just pick the best players? That's absolutely not the case. They're all drafting for need. They're all, even if it's depth pieces, are looking to plug holes.
Well, and that's very interesting, and that's a great place to start, actually, because going back to, again, our 2024 FDH NFL post-draft rankings, one of the notes at the top here is that, again, this was something that we had charted, that after the 2021 NFL draft, teams had 5.03 holes on average. It dropped to 4.97 the next year, 4.44, another drop in 2023, and a drop of almost equal size, 3.97 holes per team after the 2024 NFL draft. So it's one of those things where I'm looking at it cynically, like, hey, congratulations, teams. You figured out that you're supposed to fill your holes in the offseason. So that's the way it's going. I don't know that I had a sense as it was happening, Chris, that it was as dramatic a change over the course of the last 2 years or so, or even last year to this year. Were you seeing it at the time with your naked eye that it seemed like teams were doing a much better job of filling needs?
Well, it certainly, it felt that way to me watching it all unfold. In some ways, even with the Falcons, right? And we'll get to them and talk about what they did. But, you know, I felt like even the Penix pick by them at 8, and then the reports that they tried to get back up into the top 10, after making that pick, they tried to trade back up. So they clearly had a guy that they probably should have drafted. I'm not going to go with Dallas Turner or anyone. Mm-hmm. And then tried to deal with that after they took the Penix pick. Ironically, they may be the one outlier of what I just said.
Right.
But if you think about Atlanta and their struggles at quarterback since Matty Ryan's MVP year, it does in some ways make sense, knowing that Kirk Cousins was probably a two-year bridge and they maybe didn't expect him to be there. I don't know exactly what went on in their draft room, but you know, they may have looked at it like, we really like this guy, and Cousins, you know, typically will get hurt, miss a game or two during the season. We think we might only have him for 2 years. Oh, heck, let's just, you know, let's treat this like the Packers, you know, let's grab him like he's Jordan Love and put him in our pocket. And that explains some of what they did, is that they don't want to be in quarterback hell again.
Yeah, well, that's one of those things where, again, maybe the Cousins deal, maybe you can get out of it after 2 years, but it was sold as being a four-year deal, which I thought was really inexplicable.
All the money is really front-loaded. Any hit on the cap is the first 2 years.
Okay, I mean, so that makes it a little bit less stupid, but again, doubling up in that area when you got a bunch of needs in other places, again, that's a real head-scratcher. So just going through here, I'm going to read off the top and the bottom of the different categories here. So the teams that did the best on value on our board as we were going through charting this subsequently here, number one was Arizona. So FDH Lounge dignitary Derek Joseph must be doing handstands right about now. Tied for second, believe it or not, Carolina and the LA Chargers. And I've been saying the last several years the Chargers are more of a Stars and Scrubs team than anybody thinks. You finally saw it last year. So I was thinking that Harbaugh was going to have his hands full next year, but he's going to be coming into a situation, believe it or not, that has less holes than it did last year. And after they got out of some of those contracts in the offseason, I would say they still need help at wide receiver, but they did a good job filling holes. Fourth was Washington, fifth Cincinnati, sixth LA Rams. The Rams are another Stars and Scrubs team, even from when they won the Super Bowl. Seventh, Tennessee. They had a lot of holes to fill, but they got great value in what they did there. Eighth, Chicago. Ninth, New Orleans. Tenth, New England. The bottom five, the New York Jets were 32nd in this. 31st, San Francisco. Now, our index didn't like San Francisco's draft last year either, and they outperformed it. So there is that. 30th, the Browns. Again, they didn't have too many picks. 29th, Atlanta. 28th, Jacksonville. Looking just at filling needs as opposed to the value. Again, a team that I've been saying for years that had more holes than people thought. I really hate to say what a great job they did. The good old Squealers here leading the way. Pittsburgh filling a lot of holes in the draft here. Second was Washington. Third, Philadelphia. Fourth, Minnesota. Fifth, Chicago. Sixth, Jacksonville. Seventh, Arizona. Tied for eighth, New England and Tennessee. Cincinnati was 10th. At the bottom, you have a tie for 31st. Detroit and the Rams actually got 0 points on the index. It's kind of hard to get zero, but they did because they didn't even try and fill any needs. They just went for depth in both cases here. 30th, New York Giants. 29th, Carolina. 28th, New York Jets. Okay. 50-50 on value and needs. Maybe this is the most indicative of who did the best in the draft. That's what I would probably say. Number one, Washington. Two, Arizona. Three, Pittsburgh. Four, Philadelphia. Five, Cincinnati. Six, Chicago. Seven, LA Chargers. Eight, Tennessee. Nine, New England. 10, Minnesota. Working our way up from the bottom. 32, Detroit. 31, New York Jets. 30, San Francisco. 29, LA Rams. 28, Cleveland. The thing I will say about three of the teams in the bottom five, Cleveland, San Francisco, and Detroit, not a lot of holes in each of those instances to fill. So that's one of those things where, again, they may be able to get away with it in those instances here. The fact that they didn't score as well on filling needs or in getting value off of the Jason Jones top 115 overall. So speaking of Jason Jones, I'll reach over and make the hot tag and get your thoughts on this and how it comported with what you were thinking as what you were when you were following the draft as far as the winners and losers.
Real quick, just I want to circle back to the Penix thing. It's just more funny than anything else.
Sure.
Every single year, and I think we're on like 18 or something. Everything with your, my personal biggest frustration in the beginning is the compulsion to want to make lists based on what I think they should do as opposed to what I think they will do. And I almost never do the what I think they should do, and we move on. But Rick, you and I had a conversation earlier where you were like, I don't know if I'm with you on that, where I wanted to have Caleb Williams as like the third best quarterback, and I wanted to have Penix in the top 10 to 12. So as far as that came down, it was shocking, but then there was that little part of you that's like, ah. there was a moment where I might have thought I should probably put this out there because I think he should go higher than he's gonna. But anyway, that being said, and I guess I'll roll with that as where I want to start with this. I actually I like the Penix pick. I think draft value, it was horrible. I think if we really sit here and hash this out with Minnesota jumping up and getting J.J. McCarthy at 10, had they traded back to anywhere 11 back, because there's no way Sean Payton was taking Michael Penix, and that's the story for another time that we're not going to get into right now. But they absolutely, Atlanta could have traded back 12, 15, 20, and still got their guy. So I think as far as our brand and how we look at it, that's the only thing I have a problem with. Now, when we look at the rest of their draft, I'm not saying they didn't get good guys, but there's nothing exciting about what Atlanta did. Nothing at all. Now, Chicago is another team that you mentioned that I didn't think I was going to be super high on, but them going Caleb Williams, Adunze, and I'm not even going to try to butcher the kid from Yale, the offensive lineman, that's really solid.
Yeah.
Really solid.
Mm-hmm.
The one that, I think the one that shocked me the most, because I think I can't be alone in this, I've just had a default position since Heath Shuler. The Washington franchise just is not good at these sort of things. Now, I think most people would agree Jaden Daniels is the right pick to make. Had they gone Drake May there, I think Drake May is out of the league in 5 years. But Jaden Daniels brings some Teflon-ness to that.
Mm-hmm.
His athleticism will let him get away with some stuff. Nuke out of Illinois was maybe the best nose tackle. They also got Chris's guy. Ben Sinnott. I literally yelled out when that happened that A, I thought it was a little early, and B, there's one more guy that's off the board for Chris. And I don't know that Luke McCaffrey is really going to be a big deal, but it's a nice late round pick. Now, one team that I'm really starting to get tired of, and this is going to sound very familiar to us specifically because I have felt this way about Baltimore and I felt this way about Pittsburgh very often. And I even put out a video recently where I literally said, I think we need a new rule. Howie Roseman is not allowed to pick the best player at a given position if he's picking in the 20s. Like, that has to stop.
Yeah.
Quinyon Mitchell, the kid we talked up out of Toledo in the pre-show, goes 22, not top 10, not 15, 22.
Yeah.
And then they follow that up by getting Cooper DeJean, and then they still are hitting Hunt, Shipley, Trotter Jr. Like, what is happening? Philly should not be allowed to get this many top flight prospects if they're picking that late. Now, you mentioned Pittsburgh, and I know that objectively I'm supposed to be nice here. I thought they reached on the tackle. There was somebody else on the board I liked better. And I do agree that Frazier is solid at center. Roman Wilson is decent for a middle round receiver. I think they did well, but there's nothing about it that I don't look at any name on there and go, oh crap, that's, you know, a future whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So now if I may just jump ahead to some of the lower ones, I still don't know what the heck Tennessee is doing. I like JC Latham. He's the second best tackle. I had him taking Joe Alt went a few picks earlier.
Yep.
So you can't really take any shots on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what's really confusing to me, and I know it's a new regime. I know we're going to see what happens. And again, I'm not poo-hooing their selections, but New England. Drake May is a nice prospect, but let's not pretend like there aren't questions. Polk was the number 2 wide receiver, where the number 1 wide receiver got most of the attention. And I do like Joe Milton out of Tennessee, one of your squads.
Yeah.
Dude can throw it a mile. So I do like some things. I just, there's some stuff here that I guess my bottom line is, and we could go team by team if you really wanted to, but I think what we would find out is there is not one single team in this draft where you look at and said, that is the clear cut winner. There are multiple teams that did great in the first round, or they had a nice 1-2 punch, or even, and I forget what team it was off the top of my head, but I just saw it. The Jerry Rice's kid, Brendan Rice.
Yeah.
He went somewhere in the 7th. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's a little low for him. But I also kind of respect the fact that there are teams that are still getting some decent gems in 6th and 7th round. So my point is, there are probably a third of the teams that did really well, a third of the teams that did not. The middle third is like whatever. But even the ones that did really well, we look at it, and it's not like that one year where the Giants had like 7 picks and all 7 were massive contributors.
Right.
I don't think there's a single team this year that just straight up just killed the draft. Every single team has at least a couple picks I kind of look side-eye at. So, that being said, everybody did a little well. Some people less so much. But all in all, teams got better. But as I think it was Chris alluded to, like this is a depth draft. This was not a draft where you're going to go out and get like 4 cornerstones of your franchise for the next 15 years. You are addressing depth, need, and supplementing position groups.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's the thing where, again, you look at it over the course of the first 4 rounds or so. I know that's where Chris had said that it kind of fell off steeply. What I'd like to do as far as making a transitional point here to Chris is I always like to see if I can come up with an angle to mention about something that nobody else is going to have. Guarantee you nobody else is going to have this one. You mentioned the Quinyon Mitchell pick, Jason. And, of course, that was, again, to watch the draft every year, is particularly after the first round, it's an endless assortment of spares and windbags because that's the way Roger Goodell wants it. So people in the different costumes and get-ups and whatever up there, announcing the picks. That one was announced from overseas. There was some guy in Australia that announced that pick. And I thought that was very interesting because a contemporary of ours, Christina Keneally, who grew up in Toledo, moved subsequently to Australia and became the premier of New South Wales, which is basically to be the governor of like their second, one of their 2 biggest states. So that's an angle that I think nobody would have, Chris, the Christina Keneally Quinyon Mitchell connection to the 2024 NFL draft.
Wow. I really feel like nobody would have that because why would they?
only a real nerd about Australian politics like me would even know that. But the minute the pick...
And to be able to connect that the pick was made by somebody in Australia to... You know, wow, that's, man, I'm impressed. That is, you know, those old cartoons when we were kids about, you know, that they'd play the song and you'd follow the bouncing ball on the bottom of the screen.
Well,
you took us on a ride right there.
What might be scary to you is the minute the guy announced that it was Quinyon Mitchell, and I'm like, he's in Australia and he's announcing a Toledo player. Like, it hit me immediately. So I got to believe
that. Hey, Rick?
Yeah.
Funny side story with that. I also had a humorous moment in that moment for myself. I'm doing a recording, watching the whole thing live, and I yell out, "That is Jordan Mailata, is the player in question that you're referring to that made the pick."
Okay.
And a small little internet gem for all the listeners. If you go back and watch that selection,
mm-hmm.
The Quinyon Mitchell selection, they go to Jordan Mailata in Australia, very clearly says in Australia. And then there's a moment where Jordan refers to Roger Goodell as Uncle Roger, which I personally find hilarious because there is an Asian content creator who does Asian cuisine videos.
Okay.
Who goes by Uncle Roger and is always ripping people. And it's absolutely hilarious. If you have time, go ahead and search Uncle Roger on the internet. You will not see Roger Goodell. And I just thought it was absolutely hilarious. He said Uncle Roger. My next thought was Uncle Roger roasting another culinary chef on TV type person, which is not at all
what he meant by that. But anyway, I just thought it was funny. But Jordan Mailata was the player in question that made that announcement.
Jason, thank heavens. I thought you were going to say Uncle Roger roasting another collie over a pit, an open pit here. Thankfully, that wasn't what you were saying. So, I don't want to get canceled for that, though. So, Chris, I have no real segue after all that to pitch it to you. So, just your thoughts on the winners and losers.
Let me try to get this mess back on the tracks. listen, that Quinyon Mitchell pick, I, of course, loved. And the fact that our defensive players waited so long to hear hearing their names be picked in this draft was surprising. And I think next year we're going to see something, you know, obviously quarterback always a top of the draft bit of intrigue. But next year's draft looks to be loaded with defensive stars. And so look for probably a flip of the script next year, especially in that first round, to see a lot more defensive players than offensive players next year be drafted. I love what the Eagles did. I actually think they might actually end up with four or five starters out of this draft. I'm with Jason. I'm always surprised how things just work out. And it always feels like Baltimore and Philadelphia always end up with, you know, these great players at the bottom of the draft, and you're going, how is this possible? But yet somehow there they are, just sitting back, you know, drinking some tea, waiting for it all to fall to them, and there you go. So I really loved the Eagles draft. These teams that I really did like what they did. The Cardinals got a high ranking in your thing just because of the, I mean, what do they have, 13 picks or something crazy? I mean, they have a lot of picks.
Right.
So on your ranking, they benefited hugely from that. But again, at the same time, I look at the volume, and I think two starters in there, maybe.
Harrison, you know, better be one of them.
Harrison, probably, well, maybe three. Harrison, Benson, and Melton at Rutgers, the corner.
Okay.
Melton might not start this year, but maybe next year. He's a really good player. So maybe three. I think there might be three in there. I wasn't really enamored with most of what they did. But volume-wise, boy, you really couldn't knock it. I really did like what the Steelers did. Again, they went trenches. The tackle, the center. I like the linebacker out of North Carolina State that they picked. And then the guard out of South Dakota State, I thought was another solid pick. So, you know, they went big ugly for the most part. I'm not so sold on Roman Wilson. I mean, look, like you said, like Jason said, decent third round pick. I think that's about all that is. Again, depth there. But I love when teams get in the trenches and start drafting big uglies. And that's what, you know, even though it wasn't a very interesting draft for the Browns, you know, that's what they did with Michael Hall Jr. and Zinter out of Michigan. I really, really like the Zinter pick. I know some people don't. I think most people do like it on average, but I did see some critiques of people saying drafted him too high. I thought without the injury, he was a legitimate, you know, bottom of the second round talent. And for a lot of the year, was, you know, one of the top one or two guards. So I think the Browns, you know, got a 6, 7, 8 year stud in Zinter for that right guard position, probably replace Teller next year on the line. But great depth for this year. So he's actually my favorite pick of what the Cleveland Browns did, was that pick. Thrash is a really interesting choice. A lot of speed, a lot of skill. I wonder who they're giving up on if he stays on the roster. Is it the kid out of Purdue, Bell? Are they done with him? Is he just too slow? Are they upgrading that speed? That may be something to watch when camp starts. I know a lot of people like what the Bears did. I mean, you get the number one pick, everyone's going to give you a good rating. Again, I'm with Jason. I'm not sold on Caleb Williams. I'm not sold on Jaden Daniels. I'm really not sold on any of these quarterbacks. Like Jason, I kind of like Penix the most, but I don't know that I would have drafted him in the top 10 because, to his point, I don't think you had to. So, you know, I think there are teams that continue to understand how to do this, right? The Chiefs, they go out and get the fastest wide receiver in the draft. Some questionable hands there. That's already been a problem for the Chiefs.
Nicole Hartman.
They've got speed. They just didn't have hands. So they got another guy with a lot of speed and questionable hands.
Venus
so
the Milo, baby.
But, you know, I really liked what the Chiefs did as well, getting the tackle, getting another tight end for some depth. You know, so very pleased with what, you know, they just understand it like the Eagles, like how to go about it. So I think, you know, bouncing it around, you know, I didn't understand some moves. I didn't understand the Bills trading with the Chiefs. I didn't really understand the Bills' desire to keep trading down. I didn't really like their draft at all, and I don't think it's going to, you know, 3 years out, I don't think we're going to look back at what the Bills did and say, oh, that was some good stuff. Can't fault the Vikings. They got their quarterback. They got an edge rusher. They got the corner out of Oregon, who's a pretty good, pretty decent talent in round four. I mean, they did all right. I was not a fan overall with the Saints. I mean, Spencer Rattler, he's at best a career backup. You know, I thought a little bit of a reach on the tackle they took in the first round. So, there are some ones in here that you question. I hated the Dolphins draft.
Yeah, I feel that.
I was going to ask you about it, right, as a Dolphins fan.
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
No.
I felt like there were reaches all over the place. You know, Jalen Wright, actually out of Tennessee, is probably my favorite pick there. Everybody else on that draft board, Chop Robinson, big reach. Patrick Paul, reach. I didn't like it, man. And so, sorry, condolences on that.
Yeah, thank you.
Can I throw in my local bias real quick on Miami?
Go ahead.
Go for it.
Muhammad Kamara,
mm-hmm.
And no, I'm not going to make some claims that's a huge value pick at five. I was never going to put him in day one or day two necessarily. However, once he's there, once he knows he's doing, he's going to be a nice piece.
Uh-huh.
I don't like, he's never going to be the leading sacker of that team, but to get a guy in the fifth round that I think is probably, you know, late third, fourth, based on talent ability, I think that might be a pick you might grow to like. But today, there's no reason to like say that's the reason you love the draft. I'm just saying he could be one of those guys, kind of like when Cleveland took Betonio in the second. You're like, okay, I don't hate it, don't love it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, he's real consistent, he's solid. So that's my thing. I like Chop Robinson. It is a reach, and it is kind of a high-risk, high-reward selection, but I also like that Kamara pick.
Well, the thing is, too, the Dolphins really didn't do anything to fill needs substantially, and that's a problem because, again, I was looking at it the way that a lot of people were, thinking that next year was going to be the year that Miami was going to pass Buffalo because it looked like Buffalo's moment had kind of come and gone. It looked like, at the very least, in 2024, they were going to have to take a knee and maybe try and retool on the fly. I'm here to tell you that, again, my view of the whole thing changed draft weekend, and the Miami Dolphins are the former future 2024 NFC East champions because I had them as the champs, and now I don't. I think Buffalo stays in that spot because I will say, Chris, I wasn't overwhelmed with what they did, but they basically kind of filled some of the needs. They patched, they kind of spackled a little bit there, and they don't look nearly as vulnerable as they did before the draft. I have a couple more goofy thoughts as regards specifically the Baltimore Ravens, and that's one of these things where you look at it. If I may paraphrase that old spiritual thing that some people have on their walls, the Baltimore Ravens left no footsteps in the sand, and it's not because Jesus was carrying them. But they just, again, it's like, did they even really participate in the draft this year? Like, this was a step off of the usual of like, yes, yes, normally every other GM in the league is stupid and like, hey, may we please allow such and such player to drop to you? Ironically, one of those players, we can all, you know, probably remember him being drafted by them and sitting there going, oh, not again. It was Patrick Queen, who goes to Pittsburgh. And this year, it's Pittsburgh that ends up having all these players fall to them. So I don't remember which Austin Powers movie it was, but do you remember the movie where, I think it was towards the end of the movie, where his mojo was like in a test tube or something like that, and somebody else had a hold of it? Did Patrick Queen perhaps take the Ravens draft mojo with him to Pittsburgh? It's worth wondering about, guys.
That's incredible. It was the second one.
Okay, thank you.
That's incredible.
Thank you. But that's what I was thinking when I saw that. Just that, like, Pittsburgh, I'm not normally that impressed with what they do. Because normally they're not, like, real horny to fill all of their needs. But again, it seemed like teams were doing that a lot more. Now, I teased it a second.
I'm so glad, Jason, that he didn't just say they're horny to fill all their holes. I am so glad. I thought that's what he was about to say.
Yeah, I
know. what you're saying, though, is that Queen left, and Baltimore has broke its crown.
Yes.
As the draft royalty.
Where's your crown king? Nothing, Baltimore.
Yes.
Well, in looking at this, and I teased it a second ago, I was going to bring up something with the Browns. So the fifth round pick, getting a wide receiver there, and again, and as I explained on the draft recap sheet, I only really count it towards filling holes in the draft if a player is taken in the first four rounds. Because I do feel like all things being equal, and not every year is the same, but basically there should be an expectation that a guy can start if he's in the first four rounds. And obviously, again, you'd like to see stardom from the first round or maybe even the second round if you get a little lucky, et cetera, et cetera. But in looking at this here, and again, you wondered, Chris, about the Browns' depth chart at wide receiver. So I'm going to start with you. And this is a thing where, again, we're a big believer in accountability in the FDH Lounge here. So I'm going to need both of you guys to look deeply within and give me an answer that you're not going to want to give me. Because the last several years, going into the season, almost without fail, you look at this wide receiver group and it's like, hey, this is a good group of wide receivers. And then, yeah, as it pans out, not so much. Where's DPJ? What happened to Elijah Moore? I know a guy that took him in fifth round in a fantasy draft last year, as a matter of fact. What happened with David Bell? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is it a failure of drafting or is it a failure of development? Because it's one or the other, or it could be both, but it can't be neither. Neither one of you guys can say neither. Chris, I'll start with you. What's it a failure of?
It's a failure of drafting, not development.
Okay.
Although, let me just say, I am not a fan of the wide receiver coaches for the Browns and would very much like to see some changes there. And I suspect after this year, if we don't see some development, they damn well better be making some changes.
So wait a minute. The coach sucks, but it's not a failure of development?
Well, here's why I'll say it's not a failure of development. Who's left who left us and has gone on to be just tremendous?
Okay.
DPJ didn't get on the field in Detroit.
Okay.
Right? So I'm not, you know, Higgins left, did nothing. Right, people bemoaned that.
I did.
Would suggest that nobody has taken our wide receiver cast offs and, you know, and turned, you know, that bleep into chicken salad, right?
Okay.
So I am left with the opinion that it's a failure to draft properly and to be able to evaluate wide receiver talent properly when drafting. I don't think Barry's been good at it. Well, it's not just Barry. I think just about everybody has sucked at it since 1999, practically. And so why is that? I don't understand. You know, the things that teams do, and maybe it's just, it's their metrics and you love to dog all the analytics, but maybe the analytics modeling is just lousy. They think they've got it figured out and they need to just turn around and do the opposite of whatever they're doing because it's not working. And another team that I think has fallen into that exact same situation is the New England Patriots, right? I mean,
yes.
Under Belichick, for the last umpteen years, they cannot draft garbage for a wide receiver.
Yeah.
I didn't understand in this draft. I mean, again, not a Patriots fan, but screaming at the TV and texted my buddy who is. And, you know, how do you trade out of a few spots down so you don't end up taking Ladd McConkey? I mean, that guy should have been a New England Patriot.
Sure.
I mean, he's got Patriot all over him in a perfect world.
Yeah.
Right? And they move out a couple spots down to take a guy who's not going to be on the roster in 2 or 3 years. I didn't understand that move at all, and I thought it was stupid. Likewise, hey, the Chargers are sitting there like, hey, we'll take him. Great. You know, they just got their Cooper Kupp. Congratulations.
Yeah.
With the second pick in the draft, you just got your Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
New England decided to drop down 3 spots so they could not take him. And that was another dumb decision. So, again, Browns, wide receiver room, failure to recognize and be able to evaluate talent, in my opinion. In the same way, I think Andrew Berry's been very good at being able to evaluate cornerback talent. You know, since he was a corner and so was the head coach, I think they've done very well at identifying talent at the corner position. But at wide receiver, they just don't seem to be able to figure it out.
Well, I would agree with that. And as far as it goes with New England, yeah, one team gets its Cooper Kupp. New England gets 2 girls in a Cooper Kupp. So basically, that's how that panned out for them. But this is a situation where you look at the way that it shook out in the draft pattern for New England. You talk about their ability to draft wide receivers. Chris, I always like to say that I'm the master of deep cuts. I'm still waiting for Travis Taylor to pan out. Anybody heard from him recently?
Nope. He's probably driving a UPS truck.
He probably is. I probably saw him delivering a parcel on my street the other day. So, Jason, again, I will turn to you. The Browns wide receiver room of the last couple of years and the fact that they have to do a hard refresh on it every offseason when it looks really good going into the season, what's that a failure of in your estimation?
You got a great answer, but real quick, I want to address the Browns just in general, something funny that at least my assumption is you don't have to deal with this so much anymore, except for maybe with your dad. so they pick Michael Hall Jr. at the 22nd pick, 54 in the second round. My understanding is that that is an upside pick. That is somebody who never put the production together, but if they can get it out of him,
yes,
he's got upside. Then you marry that pick with the Zinter pick, which I think most objective draft Knicks would say that's a really, really solid pick. To Chris's point, had he not had that injury, he probably goes a full round and a half earlier. Yet this is a fan base that loved the first pick unconditionally and are throwing shade at the franchise for even thinking of making the second pick and let you wrap your head around that nonsense. Anyway, to answer your question, I'm definitely on Chris's side on this. I think it's a failure of drafting, but I'm not willing to throw out that some of it could possibly be the development side. And to the point, earlier this morning, when the Browns' official YouTube page released their most recent episode of Unleashed, which talks about Jerry Jeudy, I literally yelled out to no one in the room, why is Chad O'Shea the wide receivers coach?
Sure.
So, you know, there's a part of this that I go, it's 80-20, if I put a number on it. But here's the thing. I think that if they end up keeping Jamari Thrash, which was another question posed, it's got to be between Bell, and I think, to use Bell as the example, Bell, I think, is a situation we see all the time, and it's not specific to any one GM or any one team, where people are focusing, based on where you think you're going to get them in the draft, you're focusing on certain details and not really paying attention to others. For instance, David Bell, does he have decent hands? Yes. Can he run decent routes? Yes. Does everything else that falls under his job description kind of fall a little unimpressive? Yes. So I think that whole pick was them getting excited about him sort of being like a younger Jarvis Landry type, someone that can operate you know, between the hashes and in the intermediate space, but isn't necessarily going to take the top off. And I think once they got him, they realized, oh, we were right about those things, but it's the other things we weren't focusing on that are a problem. So I think if we're going to answer both questions, mostly it's drafting and falling in love with a guy's characteristics or a factor about his game and kind of ignoring the stuff that should be red flags. And then there's probably a little bit of it where it's like, yeah, but once you have him, you should be able to get a little bit more out of him. And we just aren't seeing much from him. Woods has had a couple nice moments, but he can't stay on the field. And even if he could stay on the field, he's like wide receiver five.
Yeah.
So one of those two guys ain't making it. And I think, yeah, the larger thing is while every GM sees value in every single round, there does seem to be a problem. And Chris kind of alluded to this idea. I think there are teams and front offices who get into these trends where they're just like, this is where we live. For instance, if we go back 20 years ago, where the Detroit Lions would pick the top wide receiver they could get in the first round of every draft until they figured it out, right?
Yeah.
And I think the Cleveland Browns issue is they do not prioritize wide receivers above the third round. They don't prioritize linebackers at all. And to Chris's point, they absolutely prioritize defensive back, primarily corner. I think they'd rather have seven starting corners than three starting corners and two starting safeties. But that's a topic for another conversation. So I think the larger thing as far as drafting goes, I don't dislike Andrew Berry as a drafter. He does drive me insane that there are certain position groups he just does not seem to put much value on. So whenever I hear a Browns fan say, we need to draft a linebacker in the first round, I literally start laughing. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
The closest thing we got to that was JOK, and the time before that, I couldn't even tell you. So I think it's a combination of a bunch of things. Berry has a tendency to fall in love with these middle-round wide receivers that are probably more of a project than he thinks they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are certain positions he just doesn't prioritize. Now, good news is, you know, we do okay at running back. We do pretty good at corner. We do pretty good at offensive line, and we're getting better at defensive line. But the point is,
well, do we do well at running back? Do we do well at running back? It wasn't him that picked Chubb.
No,
that jury's out on that one.
But yeah. What I mean by that is, take a look at every running back he's drafted. None of them are Nick Chubb. I think we all can agree with that. But now, jump back 5 to 10 years previous. Like, we were drafting guys that shouldn't even make rosters. So when I say we're doing okay, I mean, he doesn't draft, like, bumps. But he also, yeah, he hasn't drafted his future bell cow franchise, you know, workhorse back. But running back's just not an area I'm terribly concerned about as long as Nick Chubb is still in the fold. So, sure. Like, I don't want to give him too much credit. I just don't think he's wet the bed at running back. But yeah, the bottom line is they find guys they're in love with and they prioritize certain things, which always has us as fans kind of going, okay, but why can't we pick a receiver in the first round? Or why can't we pick a linebacker that can actually do all of the things you want a linebacker to do instead of being a situational rotation guy? So, but to answer your question, Rick, I think it's mostly drafting and falling in love with guys. And then the back end, there's probably some development because, yeah, DPJ, probably, if he wasn't long for here, he should have gone somewhere else and been at least something. Because he had moments. And the fact that he just had a cup of coffee in Detroit and that's the end of that is a bit of a red flag. And the fact that no one's out here poaching our guys, if our guys aren't named, I think Josh Gordon, so there was like 5 minutes where teams were trying to get him. And there might have been another guy post-Braylon but pre-Amari. But you're talking one or two guys at most.
Yeah,
so there's definitely a developmental concern. I don't know if it's an issue yet.
Well, and excellent answers by both of you guys. And that was, again, that was a macro-level question disguised as a micro-level question because, again, this is a position group that the three of us know very, very well. So you guys did a very good job of breaking that down and why teams succeed or fail at different ways. And I tend to agree with the analysis of both of you guys, although, again, I, as far as the chicken and the egg goes, I do think development probably has some part to play in that. And again, if guys aren't making an impact somewhere else, I mean, a lot of times guys are ruined by what their initial experience in the league is. So maybe they just had too many bad habits drilled into them, whatever. But yeah, that is something where it's not like guys are going and succeeding elsewhere, as so many former Cleveland Browns have done since this team came back in 1999. But as far as that goes also, too, just to play devil's advocate on one thing with you, Jason, and I'm going to concede what you're saying about the idiotic approach that Browns fans take to Michigan players. That wasn't always the case. I don't remember ever anybody really giving Steve Everett a lot of crap back in the 90s, but I remember it with Braylon Edwards. I remember in the Sports Talk Network days, us talking about that at the time. Some of these fans had their heads up their ass, and Braylon Edwards subsequently did things to piss off the fan base, but there were people who'd written him off before that ever happened, and I agree with you, the stupidity of that. But where I'm going to play devil's advocate is, as I'm looking at it here, the Browns are very well set at guard, and you could say, well, maybe not for the long haul. These guys aren't, you know, spring chickens, but tackle, to me, is more of an urgent potential issue with them. That's the one spot on the line, if I'm the Browns, I'm prioritizing would be tackle over guard. So not that, again, not that you got to try and cram it down the cram hole of filling a need with every pick, but it could be that people were sitting there going, oh, they took a guard? More of a need to tackle. That's what I think some people might be thinking, Jason.
Yeah, and I would definitely agree that with the Jedrick Wills situation, I don't think anybody's exactly happy with. And even if DeJuan Jones, let's say they work him out a lot in the offseason and he is the plan to move into left tackle, the only saving grace, and it doesn't help for this year at all, is the fact that this is the first time in my adult life that that's a team that doesn't have more holes than not.
Yeah.
Right? So my only saving grace with this on the tackle side is that the plan is to just roll with Jedrick Wills and just hope for the best. And then next year, you go in and what you've got. I mean, we went into this year thinking they'll be lucky if five draftees make the roster. So I'd like to think that that would continue. And then they can just say, I don't give a damn where we're picking. We're going to pack something, or we're just going to take the best tackle because we're picking them to play the right side. But that being said, I can definitely see the value in that point. My issue, the thing that I'm coming from, is just seeing people just go, oh, Michigan.
I know.
Like, now what's funny to the story that you kind of brushed up against, if memory serves, we were getting ready. They were picking, what, third or seventh or something like that when they got Braylon?
Yeah, it wasn't me.
It wasn't me, but somebody there that day, we went to break and everyone files out of the air studio into the lobby where we're just going to like vent at each other.
Uh-huh.
And somebody was not yelling, but was pretty loud about, name one good Michigan receiver in the last 20 years. I dare you. And he was like, that was like the mentality. It was like, okay, so yeah, I get it. Ohio State doesn't put out good quarterbacks. That means, you know, Stroud will never exist, right?
Yeah.
Such a thing cannot possibly happen. And it's that narrative that I just hate with the fans.
Right.
These are a fan base, and I don't mean all of them, but there's a portion of them that I have actually had confirmed to me in person, to my face, that they think the smartest draft policy over the last 25 years would be if the front office just looked at the draft board and said, who's the highest ranking Buckeye? Pick him. Every round, every year, forever. And they believe in their hearts that we have 20 Lombardis by now. So all I'm saying is there's being a fan.
Yes.
And then there's letting one fandom sort of overflow into the other one to the point where it's a negative.
No.
So I like Chris, I love this Zinter pick. I think it's phenomenal value. Yeah, maybe he won't. He claims he'll be ready, but even if he's not, it's still a solid pick. You had an age problem at guard. I understand all of that.
Yeah.
But to your point, I think we all kind of looked at it and said, okay, I like it, but we still have a problem, and that a problem is left tackle.
Yeah.
And it would have been nice. And one last thing, and you know you've been fighting, I don't want to say fighting with me, but this is an idea that you've heard from me for over a decade. There are times, or situations and landscapes, where you have to look at this and stop being the GM that everyone thinks you're going to be, and you have to look at this and say, we have six picks. We'll be lucky if four or five of them make the roster, and therefore, we need to pass in some picks, move up, and concentrate our efforts at the top, where maybe you only come out of here with four picks. But what if those four picks were the tackle out of Ohio State, the guard out of Michigan, and then and a tackle all picked in the top, 90 picks, which gives you a higher probability that guy's going to be a serious contributor almost right away.
Mm-hmm.
I have given up hope that they will ever do that, that they'll ever just say, hey, we've got 7 or 8 picks, we're going to turn that into 3 picks.
Right.
And really go crazy because you only have a couple holes to fill. They're never going to do that. I've given up on it. But this was one of those situations I look at and go, this would have been perfect. You're not going to keep all these guys. The guys who were picked in the 6th and 7th round, I don't think are going to make the team. And we still have a tackle problem. So,
well, I'm with Jason. I thought this was the year to actually do that, and advocated similarly myself, is that we have so few holes on the roster. You're picking for depth. To my mind, if I was a GM, I want to come away with like 4 good guys for that depth out of this draft. When they were at 5 picks, and people were like, they're going to move down and get more picks and get more picks. And I'm like, why? Why would they do that? That's stupid. I mean, I understand the classic analytics, like more picks, more shots at the board, more chances to get it right. But you'll never know because they're not starting. They're never going to get the reps, you know, just find out if a 6th or 7th rounder. So I'm with Jason. The better move would have been to package those late picks, dump them and try to move up back up into the 4th and try to, you know, and try to score an extra pick and make something out of it. But they didn't. As it relates to the Zinter pick, I think that what fans have to realize is in order to balance out, this is where some of the salary cap stuff comes into play. They got to get a little cheaper on that line. Plus, you know, you got Betonio getting long in the tooth. You're probably looking at the last year for Posick. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, Luke Whipler time. And if Conklin is healthy, he's going to be your starting right tackle, not Jones, which isn't the worst thing because Conklin can't stay healthy anyway. And Jones may be the guy that you ask to be your swing tackle to come in and, you know, depending on who's hurt or who isn't, to play right tackle when Conklin goes down in week 5, which he almost certainly will. But the Zinter pick was really because next year they're going to get cheaper on the front line. Next year, that line, I don't know what will be at left tackle. It won't be Jedrick Wills. But that line is going to be, you know, from the center going right, it's going to be Whipler, Zinter, Jones, probably with Betonio with the, you know, the 1 or 2 of his last seasons. And then obviously a question mark at left tackle. So they're going to try to get a lot cheaper on that line to balance out their dollars.
Sure.
First and foremost, that's what the Zinter pick was really. Depth, yes, for this year, but it's real about next year. And think about it. If they pull it off, I mean, you know, and you've got good players there in on that right side of the line, you've re-engineered it on the fly for pennies. Right. So, you know, I think that's the biggest move of what the Zinter pick represented. Listen, I'm with you guys. The whole, like, oh, they're Michigan, we hate them, we should only draft Buckeyes. I hate that talk, Jason, but I will say to you this. If the Browns had just taken nothing but Buckeyes since 1999, I guarantee you they would have won a lot more games than they had during.
Yes. I mean,
The reality is they would have won more games, you know. And even though I hate that whole philosophy from Buckeye fan, sad to say, they would have won more
games. Chris,
is that a strategy you want to always have? You know, that's like saying only take Alabama players. Well, no, I mean, that's silly.
Yeah, and I think that's the point.
The Eagles do that with Georgia, don't they? The Eagles do that with Georgia.
Well, they are right now. And look, it's worked out for them.
Yeah,
but you can't do that forever.
And by the way, Chris, this is a thing where better drafts than what they've done otherwise, that is, in my favorite cliche on the show, that's the taller than Mickey Rooney award, okay? Yes, they're better than the drafts that these show GMs would have made over the years, but what's that really say? But I'm sorry, you were making a point, Jason.
Yeah, I don't care what the school of choice is. It could be Georgia now. It could have been Ohio State 10 years ago. It could have been Texas 10 years before that. I don't care what the one program is. always thinking that the best course of action is to pick a guy from the same program is a bad draft strategy. Would they have been better from like 99 to like 2012-ish or whatever? Yeah, sure, absolutely. Now, I don't think they win championships, but they're better. But I think the point here is, no, picking everybody from one place is a bad idea. It just is. Because you, whether we want to talk about quarterbacks or corners or linebackers, you can find all-pro Hall of Famers that did not go to A-list programs. And when we talk about quarterback, this is a hill I'm more than willing to die on, because you can only list maybe three guys in the last 20 years who are considered a top 10, top 15 quarterback in the league that went to blue blood, very good programs. Joe Burrow is the example I'm going to give you. Is national champion, LSU, best team in the country, best roster in the country without question. And he's fantastic. But Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, they all went to really good programs that weren't very good, or they didn't play much, or they went to programs that weren't good. So the whole idea is just a failed logic. Would it have been better for this particular stretch? Probably. But you start doing that, and the whole thing's going to fall apart.
Yeah, that is true. No question about that. As far as any takeaway thoughts from the draft, I will lead by saying this, that in looking at it again, because to me, the story of the draft, when you're looking at the fact that teams are, about 20% better at filling holes than they were for the 2021 NFL draft, I think the teams like the Cowboys that still have a lot of holes that have been stars and scrubs, I think they pay a real price. I'm going to go out on a big limb and say even in a bad NFC, they don't make the playoffs this year. I think this is one of these things where you can get left behind when other teams are filling holes and you're not. Talking to FDH Director of Research Nate Noy, a Colts fan, he was somewhat vaguely dissatisfied with the Colts draft, and I said, you know, it wasn't great, but it wasn't horrible. But not great and not horrible means you're taking a step backwards. Standing still is taking a step backwards, I think, in this climate because of what teams are doing aggressively to try to fill their holes, and the teams like the Steelers and the Chargers that haven't had the top-to-bottom rosters the last couple of years, even when so many other people thought they did, they really didn't. And you saw it with the Chargers this past year, where they really kind of fell apart. But the fact that teams are learning from that, filling holes better, if you're not one of the teams doing it, if you're standing still, you're falling behind. If you're a team like the Cowboys that's falling behind, you're really falling behind. So as far as closing thoughts go, I'll start with you, Chris.
Well, I think what you just, your synopsis there was spot on. I can't imagine how Jason feels right now about the Jaguars draft and all the LSU players they just took. although I kind of like the three guys they actually took at LSU. I joke, of course. Look, every year we've got the guys that sort of nail the draft. More times than not, it feels like it's always the same teams. And then I agree with you, you know, the Cowboys, I was not, as a Cowboys fan, I wasn't in love with what they did this year. Too many holes remain. Like Jason, I continue to question. I don't understand what the Titans did. It didn't make a lot of sense to me either. And the Falcons, although I can logically paste something around, like an argument on why they took Penix, it didn't make sense where they are right now. It didn't make sense from the standpoint of, this is a pick we got to make. They had real needs that I thought they could have addressed and put themselves in the driver's seat in the NFC South. The rest of their draft, I was not really a fan of. So if Penix doesn't come out of this thing as the future, which is going to be hard if he's going to sit for 2 years for a guy who's already old, this may be all viewed as a waste of time. So, you know, again, like we said in our pre-draft show, this is, you know, my opinion was this was a draft that had a lot of good talent on the first four rounds. And then after that, it was like, yuck, mostly yuck. And why I would have liked a team like my Browns to take all those picks and move up and get up into the fourth round and bundle a bunch. And who cares if it's only four picks? You know, I think some of these guys with a lot of volume, these late picks, or a lot of teams like the like the Texans with, you know, they had like five or six picks like in the sixth and seventh round. I think that's all just going to be a lot of camp bodies, practice squad guys. And in a draft like this, know the depth of the talent. You need to know the depth of the talent. And therefore, you know, why waste picks? Why not try to package up and try to move up? Now, maybe they did try to do some of that, and maybe some other teams were like, no, we're not looking for quantity, we're looking for quality. But we did have a number of teams like the Cardinals and the Texans and the Cowboys that seemed to be looking at quantity versus quality. So last shout out, the pick I really did love, Ricky Pearsall to the 49ers. I know from a value standpoint, it helps to hurt San Francisco in your rankings because Pearsall's not, you know, was not a guy that a lot of people had as a first round talent. But I think he's a football player, and it's gonna prove that he is a first round talent and what he brings to that club. So bravo to the 49ers for being willing to, you know, draft a little beyond where his, you know, quote unquote value is, because I think his value to that club is going to be outstanding.
Well, and he's probably going to replace one of the existing starters that they have there. There's more deals to be made between now and I'm sure the start of training camp. Jason, I'll throw it around to you.
He's going to be a star.
Oh, interesting. Well, there's a real clip and save. Although, again, I can't say that I necessarily saw it with Brandon Ayuk to the degree that he has materialized. So I guess I can't rule anything out. And again, our metrics haven't necessarily favored San Francisco as much with their picks the last couple of years. So they're a team where I do look at it and say our numbers don't like what they did, but we were wrong last year. And so could be wrong again. But Jason, I'll throw it to you for your final thoughts on the draft for this year.
Yeah, there's one other thing I want to hit real quick. But before I do, I want to throw some chum in the shark-infested waters in Atlanta. What I'm about to say is not confirmed, is not corroborated. It's just me with my specific viewpoint connecting a bunch of dots. It is a hot take, and we'll see what happens. There is a part of me, though, when you start piecing together all the tea leaves, mm-hmm. that thinks that, not to say that the Penix pick was for this, but it might have contributed to them saying, yes, let's do it, because I think drafting Penix as the long-term solution after Kirk is done opens the door for Atlanta to draft Travis Hunter. They have to play poorly enough, because he's going to go in the top five, which means they've got to be within striking distance. But
Atlanta's winning the South. So let me just
really. You think so? Yeah, I mean, they did nothing to fill any of their defensive holes for the most part. Interesting. Okay.
Yep, I think they're winning the South. I do.
Okay.
It's hard. Well, it's hard to find a team you'll like in that division, though.
We'll have to see what happens, because if they win the South, this whole thing could fall apart. Because in order for them to even have a shot at him, they've got to be 9-13-ish. But anyway, that's just a thought that I had. Now, another team I want to bring up is going to sound self-serving, but it's really not, because I don't actively like them like I do the Browns. The Denver Broncos, and I'm not going to say that they had this phenomenal draft. Bo Nix was who they were always targeting. It was between Bo Nix and J.J. McCarthy, and if both were on the board, they were taking Bo Nix. We don't have time for me to go into all the specifics, but just trust me, Bo Nix was the guy from the start. I don't love it, but if Sean Payton does, then it's fine. But the two spots that I want to look at are fourth round and fifth round. Troy Franklin, and I'm not always a huge fan of like pairing your rookie quarterback with one of his targets, but in this particular regard, I think it fits. I think that guy can be the guy that they want to be what Jerry Jeudy was. But more importantly, going to the fifth round, Audric Estime from Notre Dame. He is a big son of a gun. He's only 5'11", but he's almost 230. He is a one cut and downhill runner, and we go back to the conversation we had about the Browns and running backs. If they were going to pick a running back, that was the guy I wanted. So again, it's not a great draft. It's just one of those drafts you look at another team and go, oh, they picked like three of my favorites or two of my favorites. So whether that pans out to mean anything or not, I don't know. Now, Summation-wise, I think we've done a pretty good job of articulating that this is very much was a depth draft. And even the guys taken high may not turn out to be stars, but they may be very consistent contributors. So, all in all, there's some big names in this draft. But I think when we look back on this 5 years from now, as so many fans are fans of doing, where you can't say anything right now, we don't know anything, you got to wait 3 to 5 years to figure anything out, which I think is lazy. I think when we do come back 5 years from now and look back on it, you know, it's going to be kind of like that Baker draft, where you're like, at the time, we thought there were four really big names, and come to find out, none of them were really all that great. So I think we'll see this as what we've talked about it being. It's depth draft, where you're not, there's not going to be 30 future Hall of Famers coming out of this class. There just isn't. So hopefully your team made itself better, but this was not the year to think that, you know, you were reinventing the wheel with one draft.
Yeah. Well, and again, now from my point of view, kudos to the Bears for getting, I think, the ultimate deadly combo in this year's draft with Williams and Roma Dunze. And again, I think you're going to see an aerial show in Chicago, the likes of which we haven't seen probably since the middle of the 20th century. So we'll see how that plays out and how my prediction ends up playing out. But again, always a pleasure to have two of the very best in the game with us here, Jason Jones and Chris Galloway, both along with myself, original dignitaries in the FBH Lounge. Thank you very much, gentlemen, and thank you everybody for checking out FBH Lounge mini episode 1725.